the vibrant fiber arts industry in Maine and beyond. If you're a knitter, you have a lot of company, especially here in Maine. But knitters are just the tip of the iceberg of the fiber arts community in the state. From farmers who raise sheep, goats, rabbits, or alpaca, to hobbyists who spin, weave, knit, quilt, and sew, to fine artists who show their work in galleries, and all of the suppliers and distributors in between, fiber arts have an economic and cultural impact that's bigger than you might think. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we'll discuss the fiber arts community in Maine and beyond with those in the midst of promoting it. Are you part of a knitting circle? Have you bought hand-spun yarn at a country fair? Do you dream of raising your own cashmere goats or of helping a farmer in a developing region of the world do so? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the MPBN studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. For some, the fiber arts are about creating functional and colorful scarves, hats, mittens, sweaters, and more. For others, the fiber arts are similar to the work of painters and sculptors. And then there are those who raise the animals from where the fiber comes from. Today, we're going to learn about this increasingly popular hobby and industry. With me in our studio, Linda Courtwright is the owner and editor of Wild Fibers magazine. Mim Bird is the owner of the Over the Rainbow Yarn Shop and self-proclaimed knitting genius extraordinaire. And Christine Mackey is the founder and executive director of Maine Fiber Arts. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here.
As always, we want to hear from you and the audience. What questions do you have about fiber arts? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Christine Mackey, you founded Maine Fiber Arts, the organization, in the year 2000. What was the fiber art scene in Maine like then, and what is it like now?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I remember being asked to jury a panel of fiber artists for the Maine Festival that took place in Brunswick, a great celebration of the arts. And there were not very many entries, and I remember there was a fiber contingent, but today it's explosive. There are lots of artists and craftspeople increasingly growing all the time, a lot of learning centers and farms, and their talents are extraordinary. And I see that in the products that entrepreneurs offer, and I see that in the craft shows as I walk around.
All right. Mim Bird, I know knitting is just one aspect of fiber arts, but it's a big one. I know that a lot of people knit. Tell me about your customers. Who are they? I'm guessing some are grandmothers knitting sweaters for their grandkids, but not all.
Some of them are grandmothers knitting for their grandkids. We actually have kind of two distinct groups. There's the retired, educated professional women who've taken up knitting as a way to stay socially and mentally active. And then there's the, I try to use respectful language and people misunderstand when I say hipsters. So I will say the 20 to 30 something folks who are adopting it as a slow fashion, meditative, DIY kind of lifestyle choice. And there's some crossover between them in what they prefer for patterns and yarns and projects. But yeah, the granny ladies doing the sweaters for their great-grandchildren and grandchildren have different criteria for what they want from the younger folks who are looking for a different experience.
And what about personality? My limited experience with knitters is that it's people with big personalities and strong opinions.
It can be people with big personalities and strong opinions, but it can also be very kind of quiet, shy, solitary folks. It tends to kind of run the gamut.
Linda Courtwright, you travel the world reporting on fiber arts and fibers. I understand you just returned from the Falkland Islands. Give us a sense of the global impact of the fiber industry, specifically the people who are raising animals such as sheep and alpaca.
Well, the global fiber industry has changed dramatically, obviously, as polyester, which was really took off in the early 1960s, made everyone shift their priorities from beautiful, bulky, natural hand-knit sweaters to this great synthetic fiber that can get thrown in the washing machine and the dryer, and 40 minutes later, you're good to go. It's moved with our lifestyle. But what has impacted the fiber industry, not only with the advent of synthetics, is the fact that the people who raise the fibers, whether or not you're talking about nomads in Mongolia to farmers in New Zealand, that land is starting to be used for different things. And so the very land that sustains sheep and alpacas and yaks is now being used for oil exploration. It's been bombed in Afghanistan. It's been a nuclear testing site in northern Kazakhstan. So if you don't have the land to feed the animals that produce the fiber, it becomes a non-starter for some very big issues that most people don't realize when they hear about things going on, you know, halfway around the world.
That's right. You hear about these things, but maybe you think about the farmer choosing how to raise bananas in Costa Rica, but all the folks around the world who are raising the fibers that somehow end up in Mim's yarn store.
You know, a great example, I say great in that it's so notable, is that in Afghanistan, 30% of the sheep population that supplies the Afghan wool market, okay, a longstanding tradition, 30% of those sheep were lost to landmines during the war. And so the vast majority of Afghan carpets is now made from wool imported. So you just don't think about that.
Wow. I want to talk a little bit about the appeal of working with fabric and yarn. Linda, you were talking about the advent of polyester and since then even more kinds of fabrics that are really easy to care for and inexpensive to buy. Yet, Mim's sitting here knitting. Linda, I know that more and more people are hooking rugs, braiding rugs, weaving, spinning their own yarn. What is the appeal of continuing to work with these natural fibers? What do you think it is? I meant to say Christine. Sorry, Linda. Go ahead, Christine.
Well, I think it's part of the Back to the Land movement that began around the 70s and even beforehand. People want to get closer to nature. They want to get more meditative and deeper into their craft. They want to take creative control of the entire process from its very inception. And I know in Maine there are at least 1,100 fiber farms. It's a lot of women have gotten into this field, and they're raising alpaca and llama and cashmere and wool and extraordinary fibers. And all of that helps for the electricity of the field and the allure. And I have seen amazing yarns in yarn shops over the years as they become more sophisticated and more exotic and luxuria-oriented, but still a love of pure wool is high on the list.
The smell of lanolin. Linda, I'm going to let you jump in now. I'm sorry about that.
No, I think what strikes my mind when I hear that question, and Christine's right, that yes, people want to have that control, but I draw an analogy to cooking, that if you're making, you know, your favorite, let's just say, grilled cheese sandwich. Now, it's going to taste different if it's made with Swiss cheese or if it's made with Munster cheese or made with provolone. Well, when I say to someone, I look at their sweater and I'll say, oh, it's a beautiful sweater. You know, what's it made out of? And they go, wool. And I go, but what kind of wool? Because just like cheeses, just like everything else, different wools, depending upon that animal, behave differently. And that's the education process that I think the fiber art world is continuing to want to have that knowledge.
Mm, and the connection, Mim, you're nodding. I want to talk a little about the travel aspect of the fiber arts industry, because I know that at least two people sitting behind me lead some really interesting travel adventures. Mim, I'll start with you. I've posted your upcoming adventure, summer of 2016, on our MPBN Main Calling Facebook page. Tell me about what you are up to.
Okay, I want to back up just for a minute and comment on something that Linda
said.
I think it's not just the fiber, but the process itself. I like the cooking analogy. You can go out and buy a can of soup. It's a very different experience when you make the soup yourself in your own kitchen. There's a satisfaction in the experience of the process itself even aside from or in addition to the material that you're working with. And that actually leads me to why we do these, what I call fiber tourism adventures, retreats and adventures and other places to go and other ways to do this process in an environment that we don't usually think of. The first adventure that I'm going to be facilitating on this year is we'll be going to a farm to watch a shearing and get some experience with washing the locks. And then we're going to be boarding one of the historic schooners in Rockland Harbor, the J&E Riggin, and spending 4 days on Penobscot Bay, sailing around and learning to spin and learning to knit with our handspun. So it's a sailing adventure on the high seas that has knitting incorporated into it. And that's a very different experience than going to a box store and buying a sweater. Maybe you need the sweater immediately and the box store is convenient and that's one kind of experience, but actually producing it yourself and in extraordinary surroundings and circumstances, it's creating an artistic process, a creative process, and an artifact that you then get to take away with you to remember how you achieved that artifact.
And Linda, I was on the website of the magazine, and I saw that you lead some really extraordinary tours.
Yeah, I may be one of the few people that's crazy enough to drag folks up to 18,000 feet so that they can actually see where cashmere comes from. Good cashmere only starts at about 14,000 feet. And so several years ago, I started leading tours to the high Himalayas in India, right on the border of China, where some extraordinary cashmere comes from. And that has given people the opportunity to not only see where this luxurious fiber originates, but also the nomadic people who are responsible for raising it. And that's the element of the story that, you know, I've really devoted my life to understanding, is that all these beautiful fibers come from someplace on the planet and somebody's ultimately responsible for rearing that. And it's not just sheep, it's plants as well. Before it gets to our hands being the knitters, the spinners, and the weavers. So it started with tours to India, and then it morphed into tours to the muskox in Alaska, and now it's tours to the Falkland Islands. So I've got an exciting event coming up where we're going to do a sheep-to-shawl competition in the Falklands. And we're going to bring down an American team of spinners and weavers and set them up against a team of Falkland women. It's going to be great.
Oh, my gosh. That's so funny. And, Mim, there's a competition I want to ask you about. But first, I want to get back to Christine. We're talking about travel. Because of the work of the Maine Fiber Arts, there are people who are traveling to Maine for our fiber arts scene. So why don't you tell me about the Maine Fiber Arts Tour and then some of the other events you have coming up where people are booking trips to Maine for this reason.
Yes, we've done a tour, Maine Fiber Arts Tour, since 2006. We've had printed copies of a map that's very loved by people. They keep it in their glove compartment and use it year after year. We also had an online map as early as 2008. And now we've moved that tour right onto our website at mainfiberarts.org. You can look on the black menu bar to new tour map. And it's free for anybody in Maine to sign up for this tour. And we're hoping this radio broadcast will really increase our numbers there because people are welcome. And that's where we send people now. And we've also had a fiber arts tour weekend through the year for 3 days in August. And people just love showing up at farms and getting to see take part in some of the chores or going into artist studios and seeing work put around their homes or seeing their studios filled with works in progress. And our tour is really a dynamite way to get artists and the public talking together. And I know in 2009, when we kept track and had a survey, there were 3,511 people taking that 3-day tour. So, and there were thousands of people afterwards and before and throughout the year.
Is that in June?
That was in August.
Okay.
The first weekend of August. But now our map is geared towards being available all year long. So people can do self-guided tour. They can go right up onto our website. And there are filters there by processing mills or farmers or artisan craftspeople. And they can devise their own tour. But we are missing the printed piece, and this year we're going to get back to doing some regional fiber mini tours. and have some printed pamphlets for people.
Okay. Well, ma'am, Linda was talking about competition. I understand there's a competition that you MC every year. Tell me about that.
There is. At the Lobster Festival in Rockland, the first weekend in August, we sponsor the Maine's Fastest Knitter Race. And we started out with a total of 11 knitters the first year. Excuse me. By our second year, we had 20 knitters. By our third year, which was last year, we had 30 knitters. And we split them up into two groups, the ones who knit continental and the ones who knit English. It's a long explanation, and you know who you are. If you're a knitter, you know who you are. And we have the English knitters compete with each other, and then the continental knitters compete with each other, and then the one winner from the English and the one winner from the continental have a final throwdown.
So is there a standard needle size and yarn size? I mean, are you only allowed a certain kind of yarn when you do this?
We start them out. We knit a swatch, and so everybody has identical yarn and identical needles, so there's no advantage for bringing your own or...
Is there a penalty if you drop a stitch?
No. I tell them we are not Navy SEALs. We do not go back for the dropped man. If you've dropped a stitch, just move on. And there are 50 stitches on the needle, and the race is knit four rows. And the first one to finish knitting four rows, raise your hand and say, I'm done, and that's it. Usually the race itself takes about 3 minutes.
And this is a spectator sport that is well attended.
It is. We pack the tent. There's over 100 people in attendance every year, standing room only along the back wall. And they cheer and they clap, and there could be some unofficial betting going on in the wings. I don't know, but they have a grand time. And for the knitters on stage, I hear this comment all the time when I'm telling people they should come and compete. Oh, no, I'm too slow. If you had Maine's slowest knitter, I'd probably win that race. It's not really about who's going to win the race, because there's nowhere else that I know of that knitters can sit on a stage in company with their fellows, plying their trade to cheering, adoring crowds. It's, again, a kind of a unique experience. And whether you win the race or not, they're cheering for you too.
All right. Well, we do have to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions about the fiber art scene in Maine and beyond. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Endicott Home, offering customizable furniture without flame retardants designed for living well in smaller spaces. CondoFurniture.com.
The O.J. Simpson trial is back on TV. In a new drama, actor Courtney B. Vance plays the man he cheered for 20 years ago, defense lawyer Johnny Cochran.
Finally, on the biggest stage, a black man worked the system and got another black man off.
Plus, presidential candidates turn to New Hampshire. That's later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
And you can join us for All Things Considered this afternoon at 4 o'clock. The online MPBN community calendar probably lists something you might be interested in doing, or maybe a few things. You'll find it online at mpbn.net, and if you represent an organization, you can list your event there as well. Concerts, exhibits, hikes, dinners, lectures, outings, events of all stripe and color, and all searchable by date, location, or type of event. Visit mpbn.net and click on Community Calendar.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, the Fiber Arts in Maine. With me in our studio, Mim Bird, the owner of Over the Rainbow Yarn Shop. Linda Courtwright is the owner and editor of Wild Fibers Magazine. Christine Mackey is the founder and executive director of Maine Fiber Arts. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mpbn.net. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. I know none of you are medical professionals, but we have to talk about the Jane Brody column in last week's New York Times about the health benefits of knitting. She talked a lot about comparing the power of knitting to the powers of meditation. I've heard over the years that a lot of people will knit. I've heard that surgeons will knit to keep their fingers able to do fine movement. And I've also heard that people do it to ward off arthritis. Have you heard the same kind of thing, ma'am?
I haven't heard that it wards off arthritis, but I have heard from, I'm not a medical professional, but I've heard from medical professionals that it can help ward off Alzheimer's and other forms of dementia, that if you were not a knitter before and sustained a head injury, taking up knitting can actually re-knit, pun intended, neural pathways to heal parts of your brain. It keeps your brain healthy. And any fine motor skill that you do for work can be enhanced by practicing a fine motor hobby.
Christine?
I find that it can be a very community-oriented experience, too. And people derive a lot of joy out of working together and seeing what people are up to and learning that way. And we have a Fiber Friday once a month, and all kinds of people come and talk movies and talk knitting. And I think that's a health aspect to it also.
Speaking of the New York Times article, I've been seeing it all over the place, all over the online forums about knitting is the new yoga. So our shop happens to be in the same building with a yoga studio upstairs. So I talked with the proprietor of the Dancing Elephant yoga studio, Rachel Nixon, and we've collaborated on creating a knitting yoga class where yoga and the knitting are actually integrated together in a single practice for the sort of mind-body relaxation meditation process. And the knitting piece is the mudra, the moving meditation part of the of the process.
Wow. We're going to go to the phone now. We're going to start in Bangor with Jody. Hi, Jody. Go ahead.
Hi there. I just want to thank you for having this program. I want to say hi to Christine and Mim and Linda, whom I do know. I have a yarn shop in Bangor, and I am that focuses on Maine-based yarns and fibers exclusively, and I'm just so happy to have you guys talking about the importance of fiber arts generally and specifically the various cultures. And I would just want to bring it back to Maine and say that it is a really important sustainable agriculture piece here for us, both for the farmer and the people who take those products and run with them, and from breed-specific yarns and fibers to all of the aspects that the sheep in particular, or the alpaca or llama or other fiber animal can bring to the table. It's just a really important facet of sustainable agriculture in Maine, and I am so thrilled to live in a state that is so robust and vibrant and creative around this.
Christine?
Yeah, I think fiber is really unique in our state because it intersects with many interesting aspects, the arts and agriculture, as Jody says, and economic development and tourism. And I know we have a lot of support looking at our projects because they do impact, as well as community development.
All right. Thanks for your call, Jody. We're going to take an email from Betsy. This is Betsy Scheintaub. She says, I want to bring to the discussion the fact that the Maine College of Art has a new textile and fashion design department, founded 4 years ago with a grant from the Roxanne Quimby Foundation. Our department is interested in celebrating the rich textile history of Maine and supporting the development of new industry in this field. This fall, our students designed and created costumes for a collaboration between the Portland Symphony Orchestra and the Portland Ballet. This spring, we are offering a class in collaboration with the Rancourt Shoes in Lewiston to give students experience in shoemaking, and on April 29th, our fourth annual fashion show. So we have fiber and fiber arts in academia now.
Yeah, it's a fabulous program. It's really good to have it, and it's important. There's also tons of learning of centers that are around Maine and in yarn shops with amazing programs and workshops go on, and that should be recognized also.
Okay, we're going to go to Stonington and Tim. Hi, Tim. Go ahead.
Hello. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I think of myself as a fiber artist, but I don't knit or weave according to the usual definition. My art is marlin spike fancy rope work, and for those who don't know what that is, it's intricate weaving, braiding, and knotting, all done by hand, the sort of thing you might see on old sailing ships. I work mostly with natural fibers, cotton, linen, and hemp. I make traditional things, but I also do more abstract pieces and jewelry that incorporate those marlin spike techniques.
Tim, do you do this for yourself or do you sell it?
I have a shop in Stonington. I call it the Marlin Spike Chandlery, and I and throw out the invitation for anybody interested to make a trip down. I actually started my business solely over the internet, and then in 2008 is when I opened my shop in Stonington.
Great. And let me ask you how you learned your skill.
I'm actually completely self-taught. I learned through books, but I had to reinvent and come up with some of my own techniques along the way. And there's a lot of information in reference books, but one shortfall for a lot of them is that they don't put the pieces together showing you how to make the finished thing. So, as I said, I've had to reinvent a lot of the technique along on my own.
Go ahead, ma'am.
Tim, is your name Tim? Hi, Tim. Hi. So glad you called in. One of the sidelines that I do, because I'm interested in it, is the history of knitting and other fiber arts. I do, if it has to do with string, I do it, except for tatting. I hate tatting. All the other things, including knot tying, are things that fascinate me. And as each of these techniques evolved in the history, there's so much crossover between the skills that it takes to do each one of them, the kind of figuring it out for yourself process. You learn some from previous generations. These days we learn some from books or from YouTube, and also some from just figuring it out on our own. And I think that there's a huge amount of crossover between people who knit, people who crochet, people who weave, people who spin, people who tie knots, people who do things with string. And go ahead,
my
Tim.
My shop is kind of a string museum in a way. And I'd also like to mention that I'm trying to offer a series of workshops this winter and early spring for anybody who might be interested in learning basic knotting and splicing, as well as some of the fancier work that I do.
Great. Well, Tim, I invite you to go onto the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page and post information about your store and your work. We kind of use that as a online repository for folks who call into the show. So I hope you'll do that. Go ahead, Christine.
And I want to add that the fiber arts also include paper making and felting and quilting and sewing and clothing design, mixed media, sculpture. It's a lot broader than knitting and weaving.
All right. Thanks for your call, Tim. We're going to move to Yarmouth and Janie. Hi, Janie. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much. I hear you all talking about the reflective and meditative part of all of this, these arts. I belong to a spinning group, and the spinning group, it is riotous fun. I mean, I'm thinking of the meditative, it is not. We just have a wonderful, fun time.
Do you all bring your wheels together?
We do. We all bring our wheels. We meet on Tuesday mornings up at, naturally, the old age in me comes up. Anyway, it's over in, we went to one place, and a huge room full of spinning wheels. And when you walk in, it looks lovely, and everybody's sitting there, and it's just a quiet whir of the thing. And then somebody talks to somebody, and you hear these gales of laughter, and then it all goes around. And it is so much fun. But the thing about it is that because we do that, we've all become such close friends. I mean, I had a serious accident a couple of years ago, and they all came and helped me. It was amazing. And I just think that, you know, the fun in knitting is something that has been ignored so far.
And Christine, you all have on the website a list of places where people come together to do fiber arts, yes?
We do have a bulletin that has all kinds of exhibitions, workshops, gatherings that are happening. But I'm so glad you called, because that is a really great aspect. I want to tell people that there's a spin-in in Newport coming up February 13th on a Saturday, and they take over a gymnasium, and you can walk in, and there'll be hundreds of spinning wheels.
A spin-in.
Spin-in. And there's also Spa Knit and Spin that takes place in Freeport February 26th through 28th, and two women just decided to bring their spinning wheels and have a luxurious weekend at a hotel. They told two more. Now they fill three hotels in Freeport and many of the B&Bs. So that's a place where people can walk in and experience different wheels and see great creations in people's baskets.
I love it. We've heard of ecotourism. Now we have fiber tourism. Linda, go ahead.
I'm so glad that you brought up the topic of the conviviality of spinning, because I don't think there is a more riotous group of spinners in the country than the Wednesday Spinners, which have been around for, and I hope a Wednesday Spinner will call in. They have at least 30 years under their belt. I could be off by even 10, maybe 40 years. They did author one of the first naked spinning calendars back in the 90s.
Where did they meet on Wednesday mornings?
They are seminal to the Common Ground Fair. You go to the fiber tent, it's full of the Wednesday spinners, and I think that absolutely represents the conviviality that spinning can bring.
All right. Thanks for your call, Janie. We're going to head to Bremen and Wendy. Hi, Wendy. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a farm, Springtide Farm, where we raise cashmere goats, and just wanted to make a couple of comments. One is that when we first started selling at fairs, people would pick a pattern, and then they would pick the yarn. Now they go through and find the yarn they like, and then they look for a pattern. And there's a real tendency, I think, with all natural fibers for people to be moving away from the fleeces and the polyesters, partly because they're oil-based, but also I think because they don't think they're as healthy as they once did for us to be wearing. So those are some wonderful things. And I've also found that more and more people want to come to the farm and see the animals that are producing the fiber. And I think that's a really wonderful change as well. The other thing is, a week or so ago, we had some women from Tajikistan come to our farm that are spinners. And I think Linda could comment on this way better than me. She's been a global leader in helping particularly women around the world finding a sustainable, viable way for them to have work and earn a living and get away from some of the cultures that say women shouldn't work. And I just think that that's incredible. So I'll take your thoughts off the air. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Wendy, for calling. Linda.
Well, thank you for bringing up the topic of the Tajik spinners, Wendy, and also for being one of the great leaders in the cashmere industry in this country. If you need to buy a cashmere goat, you need to go to Springtide Farm, because that's where I go. It's an incredible thing how fiber has really given women an opportunity, particularly in developing countries, to create an element of additional income. And the Tajik spinners who were just here are in northern Tajikistan. It's a former Soviet territory. And historically, these are, I don't know if I should even call them semi-nomadic, but they're in desperately rural situations. Spinning is part of their culture. But just as I'd mentioned about the loss of animals in Tajikistan, in Afghanistan, in Tajikistan, they've had a similar problem in that the quality of the wool has gone down. And so in 2008, I'm close, they decided to try and revive it in this one small town. And in order to upgrade the quality of goats, they actually imported goats from Texas, because Texas still has beautiful Angora goats. And so these Texas Angora goats, not the goats themselves, but the important part, traveled all the way to Tajikistan. And now you can buy beautiful Angora from this small village. So it's just one example of how fiber arts can sustain women in remote communities.
Well, we do have to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN Radio listener contributions and by Casella, committed to safe, efficient disposal of non-recyclable waste for all 16 Maine counties. Casella, giving resources new life.
We know that many of you have choices in what you listen to, and many of you would prefer to hear what you want when you want. And while Maine news coverage is an important part of our morning edition, All Things Considered, and weekend edition programming, sometimes you just want to learn about what's happening between Kittery and Fort Kent, nothing else, but all at once and when you want. The answer is This Day in Maine, for streaming or podcast, available weekdays around 7 each evening at mpbn.net and also through iTunes.
Climate One is changing the conversation about energy, economy, and the environment. On our next program, we're talking about net zero. The idea is to use no more energy than the green energy we produce and recycle or compost every scrap of our garbage. Could we actually do that? let's take a look at some communities that are getting close. Join us on Climate One with Greg Dalton.
And you can hear that program in about 20 minutes following Maine Calling at 1 o'clock.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling today on the program Inside Maine's Thriving Fiber Arts Scene. With me in the studio, Christine Mackey, the founder and executive director of Maine Fiber Arts. Mim Bird is the owner of the Over the Rainbow Yarn Shop and self-proclaimed knitting genius extraordinaire. Linda Courtwright is the owner and editor of Wild Fibers Magazine. Join our conversation, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to go to Peaks Island and Rachel. Hi, Rachel. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to share a couple of things. I'm a hand spinner and plant dyer, and I make my own yarns for my Etsy shop, which I sell basically all over the world and to mostly other knitters and tapestry weavers. And it's called 44 Clovers. I also wanted to add two communities that are happening right now, one of which is myself and a couple of other farm owners are working together to bring a Maine fiber shed to the state, which if anybody hasn't heard of what a fiber shed is, it's basically creating a community base in producing products and supporting each other through local grown fibers and using local grown plants to dye the fibers and local labor. You can find more about the Maine Fiber Shed on our Facebook page. And a third thing I wanted to add was a column in a new quarterly All Arts Magazine here in Maine, which is a free publication distributed mostly throughout Midcoast Maine, called Northern Journeys Magazine. And I currently write a column for it called Your Maine Fiber Connection, where my goal is to highlight and talk about all things fiber related in our state.
Great. Rachel, I invite you to put your column and put the information about the Maine Fiber Shed. Share that on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page as well. Linda, you know about the Fiber Shed.
The Fiber Shed is an extraordinary project that started, not surprisingly, in California by Rebecca Burgess. I think it's Rebecca, not Roberta. Rebecca Burgess, who, incredible entrepreneurial woman, who decided that she wanted to be able to source all the materials for her clothing within 150 miles of San Francisco. So starting with either the wool from the sheep, the cotton, the plant dyes for the dye, the processing of the wool, the spinner and the weaver, clear through to the end product, which is really how all of us used to live. And that idea is catching on in communities throughout the country.
And is a fiber shed a different thing than a mini mill?
Yes.
What is that? What is a mini mill?
Mini mills were developed in the late 1990s by an inventor in Prince Edward Island, actually a former farmer and wool processor, out of his own personal frustration that traditionally mill processing, scouring, carding, spinning, all the things that it takes to make yarn were done on a commercial scale and required massive amounts of wool than a small farmer would be able to produce. And so your wool would get blended with many farms. And if you had spent all this time just raising your own special sheep, and now it was going to get blended with somebody else. And so mini mills were created as almost like the microbrewery of the fiber world, allowing people to even process a single fleece. And as the result of that, there are now 13 mini mills in Maine. If you are a fiber farmer, you now have the luxury of being able to have just your flock or your herd processed. When I started raising cashmere goats in 1995, I had no choice but to belong to a cooperative and put 200 pounds of cashmere, which is what it took to run the mill,
wow,
single time.
Wow. Well, Christine, do you have the resources on the website at Maine Fiber Arts if somebody wants to find a mini mill near them? No?
Yes, they can check our Maine Fiber Arts tour map.
Okay.
And look for processing mills or spinneries.
Okay, great.
Or they can add their own.
Great, great. So we have an email from Sybil. She says, Christine is being very modest about her role in the development of fiber arts in Maine. She's worked many years to support fiber growers, fiber artists, and craftspeople. Maine Fiber Arts is a nonprofit supported by members and grants. I hope many of your listeners will look at the excellent website and consider becoming a member. So there you go.
Yay,
nice
Sybil.
Compliment from Sybil. I have a feeling you know her. And Rachel, thank you for your call. We're going to move on to Catherine. Hi, Catherine. Go ahead. Catherine calling from Cushing.
This is Catherine Kobe. Thank you for taking my call. I'm really calling to thank Maine Fiber Arts for their special support of fiber artists. Not people just making sweaters, but people making rugs that are art, not just to go on the floor. People who knit things that are not just to wear, but can be actually end up in museums. And fiber arts has been really helpful to, in a sense, the lunatic fringe we artists in fiber in Maine. And I owe them personally a great debt of gratitude for their support of my work, but for also introducing me to all the other great fiber artists in Maine. They have wonderful exhibits at Topsom in the building, in the Gallery of Maine Fiber Arts. It's really an eye-opening thing to go there and see what they show.
Well, thanks for your call, Catherine. And, you know, we have an email that's related to your call. Carolyn writes with a question, where are good places to see exhibits of premium fiber in Maine? So we're going to start with your facility in Topsom. Where else?
Well, occasionally we've had shows that occur around the state. In 2006, we did something called the State of Fiber and had shows at 58 different galleries and museums. I'm a USM. Somebody came in this morning from Vermont and told me there's a fiber show there. I know there is a great book arts bazaar coming up in April. There are shows within galleries and sometimes at coffee houses. But I know the Farnsworth has shown fiber in the past, the Center for Contemporary Art, and they're due again. It would be great to have some more fiber in Maine. I think Portland Museum of Art has a growing interest in fiber also. So that would be something that would be very valuable to fiber arts.
All right. Well, Catherine, thank you for your call. And Carolyn, thank you for your email. We have another email from Casey. She writes, or he writes, I don't know, this is so exciting, writing from just down the road at Port Fiber in East Bayside. I'm so glad to have discovered spinning in my early 20s. It was what was then Portland Fiber Gallery. I ended up interning and eventually working at that shop, and now I'm the owner. It's been a wild ride, and I'm so grateful for the opportunity to see fiber artists on a daily basis. Spinners, weavers, felters, knitters, and dyers. It's truly incredible to have someone take wool fiber and turn it into something beautiful. And some of my best friendships have been made through this community of makers. I'd love to say to anyone interested in fiber arts, jump in. Your hands and heart will thank you. In fiber, Casey Ryder. So I love that. In fiber. You all are nodding. Agreed, right?
And she is. She has a very good shop that is close by, Port Fiber, and a lot of workshops and community events.
All right. And I want to mention that we've had a lot of emails and a lot of Facebook posts from people who have a store and we're obviously not going to be able to get to all of them. But I do encourage you, if you're not able to get onto the program today, to post on the MPBN Main Calling Facebook page. We're going to go to Weston and Sylvia. Hi, Sylvia. Go ahead.
Hi. With all this talk about knitting and growing wool, I wanted to note that I am highly allergic to wool. And I found this wonderful farm. It's called Spring Valley Farm here in Bancroft. And it's wool I can tolerate because of the Rambouillet sheep that they raise. So there is an option for people that are highly allergic to wool.
Interested. Mim, you know about this.
Pardon?
Oh, I'm talking to Mim, one of our guests here today, Mim Bird.
I have this conversation with people almost every day about wool allergies. And there is a segment of the population that is actually allergic to wool, that has an anaphylactic reaction to wool. More often than not, people are not allergic to wool, but they have a skin that is sensitive enough that really, really fine-grained or fine microned stuff can cause reactions in their skin. So an anaphylactic response is one thing, and yes, if you're having that, then you are definitely allergic to wool and you should go with alpaca or cashmere or cotton
silk.
Or some other silk. Love silk.
Blends, Raimi.
Blends, exactly. More often than not, it's actually not a wool allergy, and going with the finer microns like the Rambouillet or merino, thin, smaller microns can actually not be felt by your skin. So if you think you have a wool allergy, I'm going to encourage you to don't give up on wool because it's a wonderful, wonderful fiber, and keep trying smaller and smaller microns. And we have the incredible luxury here in Maine of having small farms doing selective breeds. So there's a lot of access to special heritage breeds, special breeds of sheep that have finer microns that may not make you quite so sensitive as the sort of standard Highland Peruvian stuff that we see in most of the commercial yarns. The other thing to be careful of is that it's possible you're not allergic to wool, but the dye stuffs and sizing and other kinds of chemical add-on things that happen in the commercial wool production process.
Sure. If somebody is interested in working with wool but is afraid of having a reaction, whether it's an allergic reaction or something else, do you feel as though most yarn store owners will have experience and be able to help guide them to a yarn they can work with?
Absolutely. And this is an opportunity for me to make the plug for why your local yarn shop is still actually a viable, pertinent, useful part of your life. You can't actually get that information from your online store, although I'm not delusional enough to think that any one of my customers is being monogamous with me. I know they shop online, and it's okay, and I encourage them to get yarn and fiber wherever they're going to get yarn and fiber. But the people who work at your local yarn shop can really help you out with that, and you can try some stuff without a terrible lot of time or investment. I call it the chin test. I'll hand somebody a skein of yarn and have them rub it under their chin like Buttercup and see if it is irritating to them. If it is, we put it down and try something else. And go smaller and smaller and smaller microns until they find something that doesn't irritate them.
I'm going to move to Deer Isle now. And Darwin, hi, Darwin. Go ahead. You're on Maine Calling.
Hi. Can you hear me okay? I'm on a speakerphone.
If you can pick up your receiver, it's better.
Okay. How's that?
Better. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for doing the show, and also thank you to Tim in Stonington for calling in about netting and stuff. It's a subject very close to me. My wife has written a book titled The Art and Technique of Knotted Netting, and just Google it and you'll find it. But also, fishermen have been netting for years and years and years, forever. Fish nets, and also nets are also basketball hoops and tennis court. Those things that go across tennis courts.
Nets.
So netting is very popular, and every once in a while, the Deer Isle Artists Association on Deer Isle will have a show of all kinds of knitting and netting art pieces.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that, Darwin. And Christine Mackey, we're almost out of time, but I know a great place for people to get a taste of some of the incredible art that's going on in the fiber arts community in Maine is on your Folio, which I've put a link to on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page. Tell me about that.
That's a project where we actually go around and photograph artists in their studios or fiber events. We've gone down to Rhinebeck Sheep and Wool or Haystack Mountain School of Craft and give people a taste of what they can see when they pull in the driveway to these places and meet some of the amazing rug hookers and felters and weavers that are in our state. So I would encourage people to go to MaineFiberArts.org and look for the Fiber Folio.
Great. And I've also got the Maine Fiber Folio posted on the MPBN Maine Calling Facebook page, as well as a link to information about your magazine, Linda Courtright, Wild Fibers Magazine. We can all dream of the day that we can travel with you to an exotic place and see people herding yaks or cashmere goats and really, you know, just sort of fantasize about the life that you get to lead all the time. Thank you all for being here on Maine Calling. Linda Courtright, again, the owner and editor of Wild Fibers Magazine. Mim Bird, the owner of Over the Rainbow Yarn Shop, and Christine Mackey is the founder and executive director of Maine Fiber Arts. John Keimel ran the board today. Samantha Regal helped produce today's program. You can find past editions of Maine Calling as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.net. Today's program will be rebroadcast this evening at midnight. The executive producer of Maine Calling is Jonathan Smith. Tomorrow on the program, nationally, 1 in 3 girls have experienced some type of physical, emotional, or verbal abuse from a dating partner. Yet, only 19% of parents think teen dating violence is an issue. Join me for a conversation about addressing this. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.